This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Tom Friedman, has written extensively about terrorism in the Middle East. Now he's writing about terrorism hitting home. Friedman is a foreign affairs columnist for the New York Times. He's based in Washington, D.C. He won Pulitzer Prizes for his reporting from Beirut and Jerusalem and is the author of From Beirut to Jerusalem. His latest book, The Lexus and the Olive Tree, is about the globalization of economics, politics, and culture. In yesterday's column, Friedman wrote, "One need only visit some of the most popular Arabic websites and chat rooms to see that public opinion in the Arab world is split about 50-50 between those appalled by the terrorist attacks and those applauding it." We called Tom Friedman this morning and asked why he thinks so many people in the Arab world hate the United States.
It's a really complicated cocktail. For some, you know, there's no question it's been our long support for Israel, a democratic ally of the United States. For some, it is the frustration of living in basically authoritarian dictatorial states, the Saudi Arabias, the Egypts, where the regimes seem to be supported by the United States. For some, it's the Gulf War, the fact that we're starving and bombing Iraqis or the Iraqi regime, for good reason, I would say, but the way it's depicted in that part of the world. For some, Terry, it's the fact that these are societies which, in many cases, but not all, have really been failing at modernization. Egypt's per capita income today is the same as it was in 1950. That is a tremendous failure at modernization, and somebody has to be blamed. And if this happens in a post-colonial era where you are independent, then really in many ways the blame is your own, but people don't want to blame themselves. It's all of these things. It's envy. It's jealousy. It's just lashing out at somebody. I wish I could tell you exactly what produced it, but boy, it's there. And also what's happened over the last decade, you really have to remember, you know, you read, say, the Egyptian press, which is the most important Arab press, it is vitriolically anti-American and anti-Semitic. Basically what these regimes do, because you have deeply illegitimate regimes in a lot of these countries, so they kind of let the press let off steam and deflect the frustration that people have toward their regime onto external targets like the United States, like Israel. And that's not to say we've been perfect or that Israel has been perfect, but these regimes have not been perfect either, and they allow no criticism of their own behavior and actions. And so basically what they've done is taken the frustration of these societies that have been failing at development and modernization and directed it all in their press for decades now on the United States and Israel. Well, this is the mother's milk of a lot of these people. So is it any wonder that these people grew up with a very perverted notion of what the United States is and what it stands for? That's not to say, again, that we're perfect, but they grow up with no mixed picture of America whatsoever. They grew up with a very dark picture of America. And it's not surprising that it produces people at the extreme end who would do this, and not surprising that it produces a wider silent majority that would quietly applaud it.
You just got back from Jordan, and while you were there, one of the people you spoke to was King Abdullah, who you describe as one of America's real friends. He said to you, the terrorists actually want to provoke attacks on Arabs or Muslims in the United States, because if the American community start going after each other, then you destroy that special thing that America stands for. Can you elaborate on what he said or interpret
Sure.
what you think he meant by that?
Well, you know, one of the things that, underlying all the, people who don't like us in the Middle East are many people who do, many people who really admire and envy what America stands for in the best sense of the word and would like it for their own societies. They admire our freedom. They admire our naive optimism. They admire our belief that, the future doesn't have to be buried by the past, and that tomorrow can be different and better from yesterday. Those are not abiding attitudes, in a lot of their societies, and they admire that a lot. And they admire the fact that anyone can come here and make it, that Americans have ownership over their government, And that's why so many of them have their kids here. And basically what King Abdullah is saying is that you have to understand that the bombing of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon was just stage one for the people who planned it. These people think strategically, and they see this as a series of dominoes they're trying to set falling. And what they're hoping is that in response to this attack on America, we will then lash out at the Muslim world indiscriminately and basically become the main recruiting officer for Osama bin Laden and a new generation of American-hating Muslim publics and Muslim fighters. And really what our friends in the region are saying is, Lord knows we understand your need to respond and to respond effectively and firmly, but please do it carefully and in a targeted surgical manner so that you don't become the recruiting officer of Osama bin Laden and don't put your friends in the region in a situation where their publics are so hostile to you, let alone these terrorist groups, that it becomes impossible to cooperate with you publicly and maybe even privately.
Well, did King Abdullah of Jordan share with you any of his concerns about what the aftermath of military strikes would be in his part of the world?
Definitely. I mean, he's very concerned that it will lead to a new wave of anti-Americanism and attacks on American businesses and embassies and maybe even individuals throughout the region. And, people like him are on shaky ground. They know how fragile public opinion is out there. They know that there is a significant portion of people out there for whom no act, Terry, of no level of depravity against America or American targets is too much. 5,000 Americans killed in the collapse of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. For a lot of people out there, significant portion of those populations is just nothing to be mourned. And these leaders understand that, they're urging us to be careful.
Let's look a little bit about what's happening in the Middle East now. Things had really escalated in the Middle East conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. I read in your paper, the New York Times, today that Arafat declared a ceasefire and even said he wanted to volunteer for the anti-terrorism effort. How do you interpret that?
Well, Arafat knows that, he's on shaky ground. Basically, he's been winking at, if not encouraging, Islamic suicide bombers against Israel for the last 6 months. So I think he wants to be on the right side of this coalition after having been on the wrong side of the anti-Saddam coalition, having sided with Saddam Hussein in the Gulf War. My feelings about what's going on in the Arab-Israeli theater, I was just in Israel, Terry, the following. There is no connection in my mind whatsoever between these suicide bombings of our World Trade Center and the Pentagon and the Arab-Israeli conflict. Think about it for a second. These bombings were planned a year ago. We know that at least a year ago. What was happening a year ago right now, Terry? What was happening a year ago right now was the Camp David peace process. The United States was involved at the very highest level in trying to bring about a solution to this conflict, just as this was being planned. These bombers aren't looking for a two-state solution in the Middle East. They're looking for a one-state, one-civilization solution in which there would be no Israel whatsoever and no America whatsoever in that part of the world. So let's be very, very clear about that.
Tom Friedman, in one of your recent columns, you quoted an Israeli columnist as saying that the terrorists, when they strike Israel, they hit the Sbarro pizza parlor and the shopping mall. They hit the yuppie Israel, not the yeshiva Israel. Can you talk about that a little bit, like what he meant by that and your understanding of that phenomenon?
Well, what he was really trying to say is that, these terrorists, what they hate as much, if not more, than Israel itself is, consumer, material, secular, Western civilization. So you have this odd phenomena of these suicide bombers, basically. They don't attack yeshivas. They don't attack. They've never set off a suicide bomb in a settlement. They attack, pizza parlors and discos, the very symbols of, Western, secular behavior and attitudes in the Middle East, that is what they are fighting. They are at war with American civilization at every level. To think that they really just want the border to be a little more to the east or west is absurd.
You've seen people in Israel living with this constant, maybe low-level fear that anything could happen at any minute. They know that there might be a bomb going off at any minute. I'm wondering what it's like. I mean, Americans are learning now what it's like to live with that fear. What have you noticed about what it's like to live with it for a long time?
Well, what I noticed first in Beirut, you know, there were two kind of people in Beirut. There were what I call thrivers, and there were survivors. I have a whole long section of this in Beirut to Jerusalem. And, you know, thrivers, basically, well, survivors were people who took in too much information. That is, I'm in Beirut, I'm walking down the street, and Israeli F-15 is flying overhead. I say to myself, is it trying to bomb me? No. Fine. Then I'm going to go on and play tennis. Okay. In other words, thrivers are people who know what's going on around, but they don't take in too much information so that their life is paralyzed. Survivors were the people who take in so much information, who are thinking about every possible threat all the time, that they are paralyzed and basically couldn't leave their house. You know, most people in Lebanon learn to be thrivers. They learn to just sort of focus on what they wanted to do, to factor out the risk in their head as much as possible, to not take in too much information, and go about their daily life. At the same time, you know, I was walking down the street in Jerusalem the other day, and it was the day before the bombings in America. But on that day in Israel, a suicide bomber had blown up the train station in Nahariya. Another suicide bomber had set off a car bomb in a main intersection in the town of Beit Lid, and some Palestinian gunmen had shot up a bus in the Jordan Valley, killing an Israeli school teacher. This all happened in a period of about 3 hours on the morning of this day. So I went for a walk down this Jerusalem street, Jabotinsky Street, and I was walking by a house where an Israeli woman was standing on her balcony on her cell and was speaking on her cell phone very loudly in English. And I heard her say something like, everything's fine. Tell Dad I said hello. Did you have a nice Shabbos? Did you have a nice Sabbath? And I thought to myself, there's something very Israeli about that moment. That is to say, these people are used to living in this situation. All I could think of, think what happened today. And this lady was saying, you know, everything's fine. Did you have a nice Shabbos? You know, they are used to living in this situation. They aren't going anywhere. And, you know, the suicide bombings in Israel are really based on the notion that the Israelis are going to run from Lebanon, run from Israel the way they ran out of Lebanon. That is just not going to happen.
Tom Friedman is my guest, and he writes a not-bad column for the New York Times. He's also the author of From Beirut to Jerusalem and The Lexus and the Olive Tree. Let's take a short break here, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Joining us on the telephone is Tom Friedman. He's a columnist for the New York Times. He's written extensively about the Middle East and about the global economy. His books include From Beirut to Jerusalem and The Lexus and the Olive Tree. You're very angry about the terrorist strikes against your country. Most Americans are very angry about it. But I think, on the other hand, most Americans have to figure out how to channel that anger in a way that isn't counterproductive.
No question.
Is that a real concern of yours?
Yeah, that's a real concern of mine, and that's what I've been trying to point out in the column. You know, look, you know, this is going to be a very, very different war. As I said in my first column, you know, We're not fighting another superpower. We're not even fighting another state. We're fighting what I call in Lexus and the Olive Tree, super empowered people. These are people basically who use the network society and the whole globalization system to turn it against itself. You know, Terry, one of the things I said in Lexus is all roads lead to Rome, and they were great roads. And when the Visigoths and the Vandals wanted to sack Rome, they came right up the roads. That's exactly what happened here. You know, these guys made their reservations, one group of them, on Travelocity, the most popular web travel site. Okay? They communicated over the web using a very sophisticated, you know, web encryption program that was made it very difficult to detect their communications. They used all the strengths and networks of the globalization system against the globalization system. So fighting them okay, is very much a police action, not an army action. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do vis-a-vis Afghanistan, and we'll have to decide, you know, what is effective and what is useful against the state of Afghanistan for harboring these people. But in terms of actually fighting the terrorists themselves, it's something you have to do eye to eye, one to one, through very careful intelligence and police work. And, you know, that's a very different kind of war. And obviously we're going to have to take a whole new set of precautions. When I checked into my British Air flight in London, you know, coming home and went through one, you know, X-ray check and went through another, I mean, I told the British Air people, you can X-ray me till I glow in the dark, okay? That's just fine with me. I will be ready to put up with any rational security precaution. But at the same time, we have to be careful we don't imprison ourselves. I really hope they reopen Washington Reagan Airport. There is no perfect security. We have to take every rational precaution. But at the same time, we've got to learn how to fight this very different war, which requires intelligence, police work, and rooting out people one by one. There is no Osama bin Laden, 15 Park Avenue, Kabul, Afghanistan, that you can bomb or go into and close up and arrest. I wish there were, but it's not. It's a very different war against a super-empowered individual and group of individuals.
Tom Friedman, I've really been reading with great interest your columns in the New York Times. Let me read for you the sentence I really didn't like at all. You write, while this may have been the first major battle of World War III, I hate to hear that, it may be the last one that involves only conventional non-nuclear weapons. I really hated to hear that.
Yeah. I didn't like
that sentence.
Right.
Why are you using such... Yeah, go ahead.
I really hated to write it, you know. But it just really struck me, you know, how easy it would have been for them to have had, you know, one nuclear mortar in a suitcase. One vial of germ, you know, some sort of chemical or germ bomb. It's just very frightening to me. I go back to where I start. You see, what's happened is, you know, we've moved to this world without walls. And, you know, I don't want to get people all frightened. I don't want to get myself frightened. But we have to understand that, you know, the more integrated we become, the more we're tied together, the less amount of dynamite it takes to create wider and wider havoc, basically, when we're all this integrated and tied together. And, when people will do what these guys did, it tells me they'll stop at nothing. I mean, to me, the most frightening thing about this incident is that, you know, every time I see the video clip of the plane slamming into the building, I realize that I feel like I'm seeing something extraterrestrial. I feel like I'm seeing something that I always assumed, even all the violence I've seen, that was beyond the capability and imagination of human beings, that only someone from Mars could have done that. And what is so scary about this event is that I now realize I inhabit a planet with these people. I could have been in the airport with them. We all could have been in the airport with them. It's why I don't blame the CIA and the FBI. I mean, I wish they would have found this out. And if there were real screw-ups, you know, people, you know, should be called to account. But the failure here, Terry, was not one of intelligence. It was of imagination. Who could have imagined this? You could have laid out all the data in front of the most, you know, sophisticated CIA analyst, and he would simply, it would have been almost inhuman for him to stand back and say, I see it. This group of people who have been living in this country amongst us for at least a year, some of whom are secular people, educated in our universities, with their families here, are going to hijack four planes with all their lives and all these civilians in them and slam them into the World Trade Center. I see it. Well, next time we will see it. But who could blame anyone for not being able to imagine that? And that's what's so frightening to me. I look at my girls, age 13 and 16, I go back to where I began, and I say, what kind of world are they going to grow up in? And I wish I had an easy answer for this. I don't, but we just got to fight it, you know, one by one right now, and hope that the number of people who live, you know, on this frontier of our imagination and beyond are not that many, and that we can somehow defend ourselves against them.
Any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
My only, you know, final thought is, despite everything I've said, you know, I really urge everyone to be a thriver. to learn, you know, how to change the channel, not to be overwhelmed by information and anxiety. I'm taking my wife and kids to the baseball game on Friday night to see the Orioles play the Yankees because, you know, I've only got one world and I only got one family, and I am not going to let these terrorists imprison me or my society. You know, we have to fight them in the hills, in the valleys, on the mountains, in the airplanes. But the most important thing we can do is not imprison ourselves and to preserve the way of life that we have, which is precisely what they want to destroy.
Tom Friedman, I thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Tom Friedman is foreign affairs columnist for The New York Times and author of From Beirut to Jerusalem and The Lexus and the Olive Tree, which is about the globalization of economics, politics, and culture. Our interview was recorded earlier today. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.